Imagine the orange glow of a sunset over the ocean. Or the look on your daughter's face when she met her new baby brother. Now imagine what these moments would be like if you couldn't see them. Our sight is a gift, one that serious eye diseases could compromise. But yearly exams from an eye doctor can detect them before it's too late. Find an eye doctor today at thinkaboutyoureyes.com. Sponsored by the American Optometric Association.
From the trenches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to From the Trenches, real life in the accounting industry. I'm David Boyer from Sequel, your financial mentor. I'm joined here with Paul Meisner from Five Ways Group and Freedom Accounting System. And we are brought to you by the great team at BGL, Australia's number one corporate compliance and superannuation software. Paul, we're back in the same country again. Good to be back for another show.
Absolutely. Thank you all. Hi, listeners. Big week. They're always big weeks. Got some massive conferences coming up. You've been Singapore, out of the country. I stepped into the cult that is Gary Vee coming up later in the show.
It was my turn to do some gallivanting. Southeast Asia, a bit different to Europe, but very enjoyable.
And we copped a little bit of criticism from one person about the women's episode, but we'll get to that in the coming weeks as well. Anyway, but we love listener feedback, good and bad.
We do love listener feedback.
That's what it's all about. If you agree and or disagree, feel free. David, best on ground. Kick us off.
Best on ground for me, Paul. Every now and again, you know, we like complaining about our regulators. They're a bit toothless. They don't do enough. They got slammed at the Royal Commission. Well, ASIC has got some bark in its bite and chased down a very high-profile cryptocurrency, global tech exchange, that listeners might remember was, the face of it was Michael Clark, the heroic Australian Test cricket captain that wasn't involved in a cheating scandal. I thought this was fantastic because we've spoken on the show before about how easy it is to do an ICO. You just put a white paper together, and for a while it was extremely unregulated. ASIC sort of closed the noose on it, but they've really come down on this company. They actually said in ASIC's ruling, they said this business is not carrying on a business and its assets are worth less than $1,000. The whole thing was a scam.
Yeah, well, it had paid out its refunds. The $1,000 was from the deregistration document, which is a standard question. I don't think ASIC said they had a lot of money, as I understand, but then they did. ASIC said it just wasn't legitimate and with a raise because they didn't have a financial services license.
Well, right.
To raise money.
Yes. But I think it's great to see ASIC actually doing something and keeping investors safe, because there's so much hype around crypto and blockchain and all this stuff that if you're sitting there, it's easy to get sucked into putting money into it because the hype is so big. And in some cases, the hype is warranted. Like, you know, ICOs, if they get regulated, can completely change the way companies do capital raisings. But the funny thing for me is, for a long time in Australia, like literally up until the last 6 months, an endorsement from the Australian Test cricket team, particularly the Australian Test cricket captain, was seen as like the credible endorsement in Australian marketing. Mark Taylor, Toshiba, was it Toshiba?
Yeah.
Fujitsu. No, he's Fujitsu's. The Fujitsu air conditioners. At one stage, Steve Waugh was the most marketed person in Australia when he was the Test cricket captain. But obviously a big fail on this one from Michael Clark.
Weird one for him to get involved with anyway. But very interesting that ASIC has chosen to go after this sort of without using a financial services license. Obviously, Afterpay been in the news as well. Not necessarily, not even considering the lending code. I don't know how Afterpay can say that they are not a lender. Certainly that's got to come round to them because they seem dodgy.
Well, hang on, can we talk about Afterpay? It's not in our notes, but I know that we're going to agree on this. I've spoken about Afterpay on my other show on Your Financial Mentor News, and I think that the guys at Afterpay, they've been slammed in the news for basically being payday lenders, modern-day versions of payday lenders.
They are.
And I think that I've been very critical of them publicly because I like the entrepreneurial spirit of the founders. But this stuff needs to be governed by the National Consumer Credit Code. It's a no-brainer. And they've skirted these rules, which has let them lend to people who shouldn't be allowed to be lent, be it because they've got bad credit ratings or because of their age. And it's also allowed them to essentially, there's a social issue where they're teaching borrowings for things that are worthless to young people, which then fuels reliance on credit card debt, which is not good for wealth enhancement and wealth creation. Having said that, Paul, I don't think it's fair to lump them in the same basket as dodgy payday lenders and a lot of these
financial scam loans. I do and I will.
Why?
I think it's the same. I think it's whether or not you...
But if they fall under the code and if they disclosed what their true fees were, would you say the same thing?
Well, I don't think payday lenders do their proper fees anyway. So the new code will be interesting. I think, Afterpay need to get into the system. They need to get into the code. I think that anything that says, on the spur of the moment, chuck it on credit, when you otherwise won't have a credit card to put it on... That's regulated.
I have a friend who has a default judgment against him. Last Wednesday, Afterpay was going to lend him $780. Yesterday, they were going to lend him $1,000. It went up somehow.
Yeah. Anyway, all good. All right.
My next best.
Your next best. Go.
Geez, this is a nice little segue into Afterpay, wasn't it, Paul? My next best is startups. Now, startups, Paul, you and I, we like them because they produce good for the world, but, geez, some of them are... kind of just a Ponzi scheme. And a new article has come out, CNBC has promoted it, where basically startups have been slammed for being Ponzi schemes because essentially they just raise money, try to come up with some metrics to appear like they're being successful so that they can raise more money at a higher valuation and potentially pay out their initial investors, which looks like a duck, smells like a duck, quacks like a duck.
Well, I think the problem here isn't that they're not using a Ponzi scheme, I guess, is that you use new raise to pay out old raise. The problem is you're just using new raise to fuel this spending appetite. I love this thing as well. Some great quotes in here. We are, make no mistake, in the middle of an enormous multivariate kind of Ponzi scheme. He slammed the startup cycle of raising funding rounds and spending money to boost user growth to attract bigger funding rounds. From somebody who was a venture capitalist who says that they have had to re-look at their business, focusing now more on sustainable growth rather than just this.
The thing I like about it, Paul, is it's all on paper. You know, these valuations all exist on paper. These growth metrics all exist on paper because smart accountants can make companies look fantastic. Like, it's just, you do a cash flow forecast, you put in an NPV rate that you seem to like, or discount rate that you like, and all of a sudden you get a stupid valuation.
Well, I don't think any of these would be doing a cash flow forecast because that'd be so far negative as not funny. What they're doing, the lifetime value of the clients is the one
that's what they're doing it on lifetime value.
It actually has, but it is nothing to do with control spending. We've spoken about the startups a lot. Michaelino on Twitter just said something like 38 or 39% of startups. I don't know where he was referencing the figures from, but said that we're only 6 to 9 months away from running out of cash.
It was a new sort of the Australian startup industry benchmark report was released.
Thank you very much.
Michael Michelino was head of tech at Codex, that very innovative accounting firm out of Adelaide, and he's posting some great stuff on Twitter. I think he's now with, who is he with, Manjard? BDO? I think he's with BDO now.
Potentially.
Follow him on Twitter. He's posting some really good insight about tech in the accounting space.
Best on ground for me, David. There is one.
Thanks for asking.
I'm just going to move it. Best on ground for me, interestingly, I think you were going to put it in the worst, but I know I'm putting it the best. The ATO have a video out on YouTube on single touch payroll. And this is just one of the most awkward, cringeworthy, but I think in kind of a good way. It's interesting.
Can we play the ad? Are we allowed to do that?
No, well, let's not, because I don't think it works on radio. The awkwardness is somewhat in seeing the two people sit on the couch together. Anyway, it is two people sitting on the couch talking about what they describe as their first time and making the big move. Anyway, in the end, they're talking about implementing single-touch payroll, but you do get a couple of minutes thinking that it's a couple talking about having sex for the first time, which is, I think, obviously, clearly, deliberately what the ATO are trying to do. But I think it's good, David. I'm going to say it's good. It's awkward, it's cringeworthy, and it kind of just,
It's a hard job. Like, I like the idea of trying to get people to talk about payroll and payroll compliance I mean, that's not an easy topic to get people excited about. Let's be honest. It's about the worst thing on earth for most business owners, payroll administration. That's why they get it so wrong most of the time. So I applaud the tax office or the marketing company that pitched this. I applaud them for the idea. I think it's lack in its execution, Paul. This thing's awkward.
Because we're talking about it, David. This is the viral video, mate.
But our show should... If we're not going to talk about single-touch payroll, then nobody's going to talk about it.
Well, we haven't talked about single-touch payroll yet, but we've talked about this video, so there you go.
Well, that's true, but I just think... I like the idea of it. It's like, oh, this couple's talking about the first time they had sex or this big family planning moment, and then... It's just, oh, we're talking about payroll. It's just dumped in there very casually. I think it could have been done a bit better, mate.
Anyway, harsh today, harsh. I expect
more wit from the Australian Taxation Office.
Do you?
I do.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
All right, fair enough. From a government department, interesting. Now,
we've met them.
I'm excited.
Witty people.
I'm up and about.
We know the commissioners. They're great people. Sure.
They are wonderful. As an organisation, I don't think they're known for humour personally.
Well, they could,
but
be.
this was funny. Moving on, second best on ground, EJ Stevens Art, Emma Stevens out of Melbourne, David, spreadsheet art.
Oh.
This artist, and I am not a man of the arts, you know, normally.
What?
But this for me is right up there with blue
poles. Those five ways t-shirts you wear, scream culture.
This is right up there with blue poles for me as the best piece of artwork ever.
It's a Jackson Pollock of the accounting world.
It is. It's going to knock Jackson Pollock. Forget that. Banksy, nothing.
It's a bit more Ken Doan for me. It's the Australian flair.
This artist has taken an Excel spreadsheet and using the word Melbourne with different tones and the size of the text and the size of the font, has recreated the Melbourne skyscraper in a piece of art. I'm just giving it a from the trenches bow down. I just can't. I'm lost for words, David. That's awesome.
First of all, Excel is not dead. It's just repurposed itself. Basically, it looks better than anything I could create in Microsoft Paint. And both of them come free on Windows if you've got the right license. This thing's fantastic.
I can't. It's just so good.
David, I love the creativity of it. I love that it's using a medium not often used for art.
So good. Love it. Big shout out.
If anyone wants to buy Paul or I a Christmas gift at the end of the year, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, we want this.
One of them. I'm going to reach out to the artist.
Anyway. And a ticket to that Expensify, Expensicon junket that happened in those islands. I wouldn't mind that as well.
David, worst on ground. Get us moving.
Worst on ground. Why don't we start with worst on ground for you?
Oh, okay. Cool. No worries. Oh, interesting. Interesting we got this week. TaxBot. So this is a partnership, call it what you will, of an AI company and an accounting firm in Melbourne. This is Facebook Messenger. It's a chatbot that walks you through doing your tax return. Very simple tax returns. You can't be a spouse. You can't have a spouse. You can't have kids. You can't have deductions over $300. I didn't get too far into it. But interesting for me, look, chatbots are great. Don't get me wrong. But sometimes I think we go too far down the excitement chat and lose track of what hopefully most startups are trying to do, which is make money. So this a simple tax return.
This isn't a startup. This is an accounting firm.
This is an established accounting firm. So to do a return, now granted they're not, obviously it's a chatbot, not necessarily touching it, pings for the pre-fill return, lodges the return, no worries. And look, most accountants know that they could build this sort of stuff on form stack. You know, like we all, accounting firms have their internal checklists. Some of us put it on a form stack or those kind of things. For me, it's 20 bucks, but free if you refer people to the tax bot on Facebook. Now, I worry that, I don't know which professional body this accounting firm's with, but even the tax practitioners board say that you've got to take, if you're charging a fee for that for a service, you've got to take some time and effort to ensure the quality. So for 20 bucks, I doubt how many, if any, eyes are on this process. Yes, they're simple returns, but you know that doesn't necessarily. Well, it worries me for them. I don't, you know, it doesn't worry me. Some people have sort of said this is quite good lead generation. Interestingly, I went through the chatbot, having a spouse, I was disqualified from having the tax bot do my tax. But It didn't refer me to the accounting firm that's in the partnership. It didn't upsell me. In fact, the only place it sent me to PwC's AirTax, but it didn't even send me with a link so that they could get a kickback commission. This just seems like the worst business idea I've ever seen. Because an argument, and David, you said that chatbots are quite easy to build.
Yeah, they're not that innovative anymore.
Yeah, so it's not like they've dropped hundreds and hundreds of thousands. No. You don't know how much. But still make some money out of it. Like, is this what, you know, an accounting firm that prides itself on being in business advisory services, what kind of advice are they getting?
There's a part of it that's just... Part of it's just innovation for innovation's sake. Like, I don't think chatbots are that innovative anymore. Like, I've got a HubSpot account. I can build a chatbot in HubSpot for free on my existing platform, because a chatbot is basically you build out your questionnaire and almost like your workflow of information, and the chatbot just guides you through it. It is a bit cool. It is a bit funky. It is a fun way to interact with a brand, especially for millennials who are getting increasingly used. It's an interesting experiment in customer service, but if it's not going to make money, if it's not going to generate leads, if it's not going to upsell, like, what's the business case for this?
And I guess it's coming.
That's what I'd like to know. What's the business case?
I don't think there is much. Anyway, but that's interesting. That was worst on ground for me. Second worst on ground, David, this is... we talk about technology and when it goes right and wrong. I am still in my Facebook feed getting numerous posts, those promoted posts, in Greek. David, like, not even... Like, the actual text is written in the Greek alphabet. Like... Yes, I was in Greece. Wow. You know, I spent a month.
Yeah, we get a point.
I spent
you're
a month
Greece,
there.
Right.
While I was there, that's
seven
fine.
Weeks.
You know, I still can't. I mean, they should know that everything else I do on my phone is in English. Not being proficient in the Greek language, not sure why international posts just be in an international language. But I'm still getting them, and I've been back for like 3 weeks now. Anyway, so that gets worse on ground for me. Dumb robots is what I, just the general.
Too many cookies.
Category.
Too many. Are they called gyros because you picked them up in Greece? Get it? Zing!
That is the worst. That's my new worst on ground.
Oh, really? Have I made a worst on ground? I think I have once. I did some
that
PR
was shocking.
That you
now,
didn't
come on,
like.
are you gonna give your worst
on ground? All right, me mate Hugh Walker. Lots of people know Hugh from his days at Receipt Bank. He's now moved across to Practice Ignition, and Hugh's written a blog called "One Simple Trick to Avoiding App Overload." App overload, for those who don't understand or don't know what it is basically there's too much out there. It's hard to know what to do or where to keep up, and so you have decision paralysis. You don't know which way to go, you don't know where to get good information from. Hugh has sort of gone through and he said that the one simple trick is actually just to talk to a trusted person and get advice. You got to be careful with that, because just because you trust them doesn't mean they're an actual expert. You know, it's unlikely I'm going to recommend something that I haven't used before, but just because it works for me and solves my problem doesn't mean it'll solve yours. The reason why this is worst on ground is where the root cause of app fatigue or app overload is, Paul. Hugh suggests there's 700 add-ons in Xero. He said there's about the same in QBO. There's actually more. There's 3,500 in the QuickBooks marketplace, according to QuickBooks. That's from a press release. That's more than Salesforce.
Ouch.
So there's a lot, yeah. Right? But that's not where the fatigue comes from. The fatigue comes from, Paul, that ridiculous amount of messages being put to us by the established apps. If I sign up to an event or a conference, I'll get emails from 6 or 7 apps that I've never given my email address to. You have really well-funded and really good high-quality marketing departments with salespeople pushing out email. It's very easy. I'll tell you what, Paul, sometimes I can open up my email in the morning and it's not unusual to have between 10 and 20 sales or marketing messages from accounting add-ons, some of which I've signed up to, some of which I haven't, but there's plenty of noise being put in front of me about which piece of software I should buy. The fatigue comes from the noise, not from the presence of the app itself. We should have more apps. Competition's good. And a lot of them are staying in niche and solve really specific problems, which is great. The fatigue is coming from the noise, and so I find it very ironic that Hugh Walker, head of customer success at Practice Ignition, who's actually, from all accounts, pretty damn good at his job, would comment on the fact that there's app fatigue when he's involved in creating that fatigue, according to what I think is actually causing it. Paul, you've had a shocked face during that rant. Was it?
I had a quick read of the article, but, you know, kind of, I cursory read it, and then, but didn't. You know, listen to you talk about it. But anyway, now I've read it. Just some of them, and anyway, it's throwing around figures on App Advisory. I wish people who work for software companies would just tell us about the software. Like, just tell us. And then this is no comment about you. This is, look, in terms of keeping up with the apps, accountants if software providers actually just gave half the information about the actual app product rather than telling accountants how to suck eggs. And what services we should be offering and whether or not we should be doing timesheets or whatever. I don't know. I just think that accountants just don't get actual practical data or practical information about why to use the product, how to use the product, and how to get started in it, and who and which clients relate to it. Just give us practical information about the product and the rest of it, leave the thought leadership at the door. Anyway. That's all. But he referenced this accounting industry performance report from Xero. And I think that might have slipped us. That was my shocked face. So I'm going to...
No, that didn't slip us. We looked at that last year. It's just got so much data in it, it was actually too hard to actually understand what was happening.
Okay. All right. But you said that
the average firm, the average accounting firm with 250 clients would be able to make $62,000 annual revenue from App Advisory. I don't know any firms doing that.
I just think that's...
Do you?
That number, that report from Xero did cover every firm, large and small. Anyway, let's not focus on it. Less thought leadership, more product information would help, I think, accountants understand the products rather than... and would clear some of the noise.
Well, it's just be nice if people stop making themselves the news.
Anyway, all right, we've covered it.
In-depth ball.
In-depth. So, David, in-depth topic this week. We both went to conferences that were, I guess, not standard for us. You jumped on a plane and headed to Singapore with a handy-sized Australian contingent, I must say.
Well, this is an interesting story why that happened as well.
You, Wayne. So you're going to talk about that because often, conferences in another country... can throw up some different insights into that. And I delved into the world of Gary Vee. Now, there's pretty much... I walked in as possibly the most sceptical person, perhaps, in that room.
No, that's never the role you play.
I didn't have a hoodie or a beard at the time.
You would have had a branded corporate T-shirt,
I felt... I can't remember. Anyway... So we're going to talk about that. So we both did something different. David, tell us about what did you go to in Singapore? What did you think?
So I went to the Accounting and Finance Show Asia, which was in Singapore. It's the first of its kind in Asia, a vendor-neutral show put together by Terrapin, one of the global giants in events. As far as I can tell, they make National Media, who run Abe and the upcoming Accountech Live, look like a minnow. These guys are huge, There are a couple of things I learned from it that were really interesting about events, about where Australia is seen in the world in the accounting technology and accounting disruption space. And also I learned a bit about myself and I learned a lot about the apps and the add-ons. So I'm going to go through some of that. Bear with me. The first is what I learned about Australia. We're legitimately, and you know, when did you first become a Xero firm? 8 years ago.
Nine years ago.
Yeah, Australia, and in my eyes, you're the first. So Australia are 9 years ahead of most of the world on turning our firms to the cloud and sort of considering the services that we provide our clients based on the cloud. 9 years, that is a massive amount of IP. I went to that expo because the Singapore Accounting Commission said to the organisers, we need more Australian knowledge here because Australia's leading the way. It ended up with myself, Wayne Schmidt, Lillette Collegia, Matt Paff from Australia were there. There are a couple of Australians who went just to participate. There was a gent from New Zealand whose name just escapes me, Brad Golchin, who is fantastic, really switched on, does some really cool stuff because New Zealand is sort of, I'm including New Zealand with Australia in that. We could be knowledge exports. Now, given that we have sold off all our farmland to New Zealand and China, the next best thing that we can export could be accounting knowledge. Oh, that was one of the big things.
Should be. Yeah. We've seen it. We've seen it and done it. And with the Digital Taxation Office, you know, for heading to the UK. Like, I was on a global call this morning. Interesting.
The other big takeaway for me is the bit that I learned about myself. You know, we talk about in this show, we're commenting a lot about what we're seeing and we're doing things inside our firms that are kind of innovative and cutting edge. And because we're doing it, it enables us to comment. I gave a keynote, which was sort of my big picture stuff, a bit similar to the TED Talk, a bit expanded. It was packed, which was absolutely great, and I think it motivated a lot of people to embrace the change that's coming. But I did a side talk on CFO advisory and SMEs, and it was a bit big picture, but what was needed, and this is a lesson to anyone out there who's giving talks, they needed much more practical advice, and I walked away thinking I really could have done that better. Like, I really should have taken through how to find the client, how to engage, how to price, how to scope, what the engagement letter should look
like. That was Lalette's.
Yeah, but not. I just wanted to do it from advisory. I think I've had so much experience on this. I feel like I should have shared that. So I actually walked away giving myself a pass mark, but I reckon I could have done a lot better on that talk, which was just an interesting learning for myself. The next thing is how advanced the Australian add-ons and apps are in selling to us. So I did a tour of, I visited almost every store that was at this show, lots of apps and add-ons that I'd never seen before, and most of them started with, how can I help you? I said, well, what do you do? Well, what do you need? Well, what do you do?
That old chestnut. Do everything.
Well, what...
We do everything, David.
What are you looking for? I said, well, what problem do you solve? Well, what problem do you have? I said, hang on. What's going on here? So there was no... It's funny, you know, I've just given a worst on ground and complained about how much we get sold and how much noise that creates. But at the same time, like, sales done well is very educational and very important to us, and a lot of them didn't do it well. And that's because there aren't a lot of shows and expos in Asia, so they're not used to presenting their product in that environment and that crowd. And I was talking to a PI, Practice Ignition, were there, and Spotlight Reporting were there, so I spent a lot of time hanging out with those guys. Actually had a few drinks at Marina Bay Sands, top of the world, beautiful, on the last night, which was $25 a cocktail, Paul. And I don't know how much alcohol was in them because I had about 10 and barely felt tipsy. I think you're paying for the view up there, mate.
Ouch, yeah.
I was just talking about where they saw the mark, and they felt something very similar. Like, they were ready to share, but at the same time, the attendees weren't ready to ask the questions that the Australian market has. So you just have this whole market that's where we were probably 8 years ago with those very first zero cons, and it was just a really great experience to be a part of that. The next thing that was really interesting was, you know, did I learn anything by going to it? You know, I've been speaking for a long time. The HubSpot conference was on the same time as ZeroCon this year. If we didn't have the show and, you know, commitments to interview people and you know, listeners, the feedback that we got about the Steve Amos and Ben Unsold interviews were amazing, I would have learned more at the HubSpot conference, I'm convinced, because I know my Xero stuff reasonably well. I still learned a few things at ZeroCon, but not as much as I could have. So did I learn more from the Asian conference? Not as much, but what was interesting is I found myself, in supporting the Australians who were there, I found myself learning, paying more attention to them than I would have if they were in Australia, and learned and picked up a few things from that, which was really interesting, mate.
Nice. Nice.
Now, you went to something a lot more high energy than an Asian-based accounting conference.
Well, and I must thank you for the tickets, David. So I got a call one night. David was, I think you were actually at the airport, and you said, look, do you want a ticket to go see Gary Vee? It turns out that it was a whole day of events, Janine Ellis and others that I hadn't heard of, and I said... One of those moments where I went, you know, like part of me was just gonna go, are you kidding me? Like, why would I even bother listening to a windbag? No disrespect. And I'd watched
enough. No disrespect to our show and the listeners who listen to us.
I don't know, all the Gary Vee fans out there. I'd seen some YouTube videos, obviously, you know, seen what he's about. I kind of got the feeling he was a little bit famous for being famous. Just, anyway, I sort of, in a way, I put him in the Tony Robbins basket. More of a business sense. Anyway, yeah, David, I didn't put it on social media that I'd be there. I haven't really talked about it because I wasn't ashamed. Didn't need to. It certainly
you
is.
Didn't put it on social media.
I didn't because it's a little bit like cult-like. Like, you don't want to know. I just sat at the back. Anyway, I sat at the back room. But can I just say, David?
You can.
I walked away.
Uh-oh.
I walked away actually impressed. I'm not quite. Look, I'm not quite going to buy the sneakers and the T-shirt just yet. But there was some, like, it was surprisingly practical. Now, he made a lot of comments. Like, what struck me, I mean, apart from the swearing, but that's fine because I enjoy a good, you know, presentation with swearing. Clearly has a passion for it. But he also was very practical on numerous times. He was almost insulting to the audience in that he said, I have been saying the same message for 4 years and people come and read my books and buy all this and subscribe to his podcast and all that sort of stuff to just do the same, like to do nothing. So he sort of, in with his talk, was all of these like, guys and girls, just do something. There's no silver bullet. Don't just come to a conference thinking you're going to walk away with the checklist on how to do it. You know, it takes hard work, which is really good because I think sometimes those people are just strung along by the hope.
You thought he was one of those, buy my ultimate checklist that will guarantee you $1 million in sales.
To be honest, I did. Yeah,
he's not like that.
No, I know. Which
did you feel motivated after seeing him?
No, but it's funny. I'm happy with my day job. Like, clearly I think that market is, you know, he was big on, you know, do you want to turn your side hustle into your main business?
Entrepreneurs.
Exactly, yeah. Don't just sit there and kind of dabble, grab the bull by the horns. I'd kind of done that 8 or 9 years ago. You know, I'm happy having a great day job that I like, and my side jobs are my side jobs. I'm not sitting there...
This is your side job. We run a podcast. This is a side job.
But I'm not secretly going, I hate my day job. I want this to overtake it and get rich quick.
You talk to any of the attendees?
I was too scared, David.
The millennial mob was going to overrun you with their enthusiasm.
I clearly wasn't cool enough. I tell you what, though, like the amount of people taking YouTube videos, you know those selfie videos... in the thing, talking about what they'd learnt and, you know, that they were clearly, wanted their channels to be...
content marketing. That's his...
He said, and this is the only... I sort of couldn't believe this. He goes, if you're not doing 100 pieces of content a day, you're going backwards. And I just sat there and went... I cannot believe he's telling these people just to put... Because you know that if it's coming from someone who's not versed in content marketing, it's not going to be great content, right? Like, pieces 60 to 100 are going to be pretty thin on the ground.
100 pieces a day.
He made some very interesting comments. I've made some notes, so I want to...
What's that made up of?
I just want to... Because,
by industry standards, you and I produce a lot of content. Wouldn't be close to that.
This is what I'm saying, right? So, but what he said is he does... A lot of his content has multiple versions. So he was big on, you know, what does your audience want? You know, like, but you can have multiple, not all of your content on all channels to all people should be the same. He had some really interesting views on his parents were very, not strict, but were big on not giving him too much allowance. He had to go and get a lemonade stand, wash the car, do that kind of stuff, which as parents of young kids, David, that resonates. He thinks influencer marketing, now there's a bit of influencer marketing bubbling along underneath the surface of the accounting industry, but he says it's really interesting because people don't know how to value themselves. So there's a lot of deals there to be made before the big money comes in and really just raises prices, which I felt was really interesting.
Is influencer marketing bubbling underneath the surface in the accounting industry?
We won't talk about it, David, but maybe.
I'd like it to be very prevalent if it was. I'd like people to know.
I don't have a problem with influencer marketing if the influencer lets the market know that they're spruiking a product, but that's just personal. Great.
This podcast is brought to you by BGL Corporate.
Exactly, yeah. if we're paid for, we say. And you were flown to...
I was flown, yeah, because the Singapore Accounting Commission said we want more Australians.
And I was, given a free ticket. Not like
courtesy
not
of Gary's courtesy of Sequel.
Thank you, Sequel. look, Gary, he had a great focus on don't say I'll learn it, just do it. Very interesting mix of insulting the audience and inspiring them. It was kind of hit them and lift them up.
I think the Marines do that.
Which was, it was really interesting. Set realistic goals and income. Now, this is something that I've used, which I always find funny. You know, these people out there going, I want to make $1 million a year. And I don't know why I put an American accent in, but a very bad one. But people who are saying, I'd just love to make $1 million a year. You know, less than 1% of people of all top earners earn that money. Like
$1 million.
$1 million. Yeah. Like, but these people have unrealistic goals. You know, just aim for, you know, so don't. And he was very interesting on that. He's like, when you set such a lofty goal, you like, and you know you'll never reach it, you're always disappointed. You know, so set realistic goals. He's 42, which found me interesting. A lot of people say every time he hears, you know, I didn't grow up with this, he's like, well, neither did I. You know, you didn't grow up driving, but turned out all right for you in the end. So some really practical
stuff. Everything is a learned skill. That's a big thing of his.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Everything is learned. Be yourself. Don't act. If it's an act, then you can't keep that content up. Overall, I'm not fully subscribed, getting the T-shirt and leaving my job and, you know, going and doing whatever. But
valuable.
I was impressed.
Wow.
I was impressed. I think, you know, 80 to 90% of the audience won't get it in terms of should save their money and are just there to try to, I don't know, think they'll just imbibe this information and they'll walk out automatically with the tools to do it. But I'm a fan. I liked it. Anyway, I was messaging Steph Hines because I know she's, you know, a student or a follower of his, and so I was actually quietly impressed.
I listen to Gary Vee when I need a kick up the butt.
Huh.
Like, I know what I'm going to get from Gary is an in-your-face, no-nonsense, a bit like the way you and I talk about accounting, really, when I just need that kick.
Yeah, I like that. I respect
that. But too much Gary Vee does my head in.
Yeah, it was, and I just thought that it was very practical. Like, it was good that it was, and it was realistic lessons, realistic goals, and just push that hard work. Because I think a lot of people, the kids, David, don't see that.
Excellent. Anyone?
Well done. All right.
So would you recommend accountants go to conferences that aren't necessarily the standard accounting conference? Obviously, WCOA coming up, I should all go to.
You know, so I didn't get anything out of it, out of my accounting firm. Who would have, though? Like, interestingly, who would have? If you were starting a firm from scratch,
yeah,
and you were trying to leave another firm, like I'm trying to put the accounting industry in mind, or if you have an online business that you're bubbling away that you do hate your day job, be it accounting or be it otherwise, it was valuable. It was valuable to that. There was a great session, interestingly, on Amazon selling, which was quite interesting, before that. But I would, if you need to take a leap. You know, if you're happy where you are and you're just trying to improve your business, I didn't get anything that went take my business from already running to running better. Apart from, like you said, David, a little bit about that kick up the ass, just do it.
Yeah.
You know, move forward and things will happen. So don't just stand and watch and say, I need to do that or I should do that.
Yeah.
Anyway, very interesting. Good stuff, David. Another week. Oh, what have we got coming up? Heaps coming up.
I'm going to Sydney on Thursday. We've got a bit of a recruitment session for some of our Sydney wannabe financial mentors who will be joining Sequel. Then we're going to Sydney again for World Congress of Accountants.
We are. And then Accountec Live the week after. Now, massive
Accountec Live. Let's talk about Accountec Live while we're talking about events. If you are in Melbourne, I strongly recommend you go to this. It's the first vendor neutral tech event in Melbourne. Ooh.
It's the old ATSA.
I don't want to say
it's ever. The old ATSA.
Yeah,
it's
but ATSA wasn't in Melbourne. A long time ago, because Melbourne's been let down by CA and CPA for great conferences. Accounting Business Expo, obviously, in Sydney. This is put on by the same guys. The sessions have been curated by our friend Sholto McPherson, who did the sessions at Accounting Business Expo. They're pretty cool. There's some really new stuff out there. We are going to be doing a live show from ATSA. We're going to do some other things around from ATSA, from Accountec Live. I strongly recommend you guys go and check it out if you're in Melbourne. It's a two-day event. It's free. So just register, even if you don't go because something came up. Don't worry about it. But it's worth going to and asking these tech add-ons your pressing questions.
Absolutely. Have a great week.
See ya.
See ya. Thanks again for listening to an episode of From the Trenches. David and I love to hear from listeners, so you can reach out if you've got feedback or story ideas. Get in touch. I can be reached on Twitter
at Paul Meissner _ or on LinkedIn, Paul Meissner.
I'm on Twitter at David Boyar, B-O-Y-A-R, on LinkedIn, David Boyar.
From the trenches.
Our sight is a gift, one that serious eye diseases could compromise. But yearly exams from an eye doctor can detect them before it's too late. Find an eye doctor today at thinkaboutyoureyes.com. Sponsored by the American Optometric Association.